I'm Brady Berserker from Super Geeky Playdate, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're listening to now, the opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and I'm Annika Wills, and I played Polly in Doctor Who in 1966, and you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. Reactive. Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry, if we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning. Welcome to episode 251 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where the only real advantage to excessive pain medication is a trip back in time. I'm your host. My name is Keir Hansen, and Jay and Haley aren't with me in the studio this evening because I'm doing this well after the point of our usual recording. I did something extremely stupid over the weekend and injured myself pretty thoroughly, so we had to postpone the interview that we were going to have with the Biggs family, who run the Whovian Running Club. We're going to be speaking with them in about 2 weeks' time. But in the interim, since we didn't have an opportunity to discuss things this week, we wanted to use an archived recording of a panel discussion that we had at Regeneration Who Volume 3 in Baltimore this past year. I was joined by a lot of guests you're going to recognize if you listen to their names as we go through. Ty Gooden, Don Cleese, Ian McCann, among others. And we had a discussion about dream casting. According to the synopsis that went out on the program for the convention, we were going to be discussing hypothetical best scenario casting for roles in Doctor Who as we know it right now, as far as things, characters that have already been put in play. It quickly devolved into, well, a lot of good-natured ribbing and arguments, and then some discussion about the 13th Doctor casting, which had not yet taken place in March of this year when this was recorded. So bear that in mind, as we do not have any inkling of Jodie Whittaker on our radar prior to getting started. So put yourself in the wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey mindset here as we drift back to Regeneration Who 3 and our panel just about to kick into progress. Enjoy.
Everybody involved here, my name is Keir Hansen. I'm the host of a podcast called Gallifrey Public Radio. Also another cast called In Defense Of, which is not necessarily related to the Whovian scope, but we dance in and out of that topic on a pretty regular basis. Tonight we are kicking off our first of a number of panels this weekend to discuss dream casting. Specifically saying we are kind of going to let the opinions fly because this is our opportunity to discuss casting preferences and predictions for the future of Doctor Who, including hypotheses about characters that we hope to see or see develop further under the Chibnall era as we get into Series 11, possible returns of classic characters, and of course, because who isn't discussing it these days, the casting for who will be our 13th Doctor, depending on how you count.
Capaldi's leaving?
No, he's going to be here forever. He's like Santa. So, give an opportunity for our panelists to introduce themselves. So going down the line here, Ian.
Hi, my name is Ian McCann. I'm a writer and I guess a blogger now at the Casual Nexus.
My name is Ty Gooden and I'm a freelance writer, written for The Guardian, Paper Magazine, Pace Magazine, and many other places.
Yay, Guardian!
I'm Don Cleese. I'm the Vice President of Programming for Acorn TV, which means I get to watch television for a living.
Don's got the best job ever.
Quite possibly.
Yes, as an hire to be as an assistant.
We are your faithful consumers.
Very cool. Thank you.
And how are you?
And I'm Heather McHale. I am a teacher at the University of Maryland. I'm working on a book about Doctor Who, which means I also get to watch specifically Doctor Who television for a living.
See, I don't get to watch Doctor Who for a living. So you know, I got.
I'm working on a book too about Doctor Who. Yes.
It is the best excuse possible for watching way too much Doctor Who.
It's great. Come time to file your taxes.
It really is.
All right, and just so we know, I think the microphones are down, so we're just going to use our classroom voices. For the sake of the panel. So I figured I'd want to get kind of started because one of the things that brought this to my mind, it's actually something I'm going to be discussing tomorrow on another panel, is specifically focusing on the writer's room format that's been proposed for Series 11. But the whole Chibnall era and what this incoming age of Chibnall might mean for the program in terms of what that does towards casting of characters that we have yet to meet. Whether that be our principal characters, but it also has to do with anybody that they choose to bring back. Ice warriors, ice queens, what have you. So I figured I'd kind of lob this out to you folks and kind of think about when you think of what you do know of Chris Chibnall and the kind of material that he has historically presented to us. Thinking Broadchurch specifically, what does that tell you as far as what you might come to expect from character archetypes in the show proper?
Well, if I wanted to go for the, sort of the slightly cheap burn, I would say he's Eric Saward with production smarts. Just because he's a very good thriller writer. I got to be honest; I think his work on Doctor Who has always underwhelmed me. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's, but again, you know, Broadchurch is undeniably gripping.
Some seasons of it.
Well, right. The second is definitely
shit.
I was going to say contentious, but but I think he frankly seems more at home, down to earth. Now, does that mean he's going to go back to the really explicitly down to earth approach of Russell Davies, but perhaps with less of the feels, as some like to say dismissively? I don't know. I mean, I think that he's a good television writer. Mm-hmm. Again, in certainly in that vein, in that kind of mystery thriller vein. Because a lot of what he's done has been in that vein. You know, he did a docudrama about the Great Train Robbery. Mm-hmm. You know, one miniseries, one episode from the point of view of the crooks, one from the point of view of the criminals. You know, that's. Of course, that sort of approach would never work in Doctor Who.
But with regards to what he typically does, both within what he's written for Who and what he's done, you know, we'll take with Broadchurch, as far as really unpacking individual characters,
right?
And really saying, all right, there's the face you wear, mm-hmm. there's the face you hide, and there's the face that no one will ever see. You know, and you get to decide at any given moment which, you know, how deep of a layer the audience is going to get into that perspective. Is there something that you can see mapping to when he's got the reins, as far as within, you know, either an adversary for the Doctor or somebody that the Doctor has to work with or work for or work to save, that says, you know what, that's something that has yet to be done. I would love it if we had to deal with X, Y, Z.
I think he'll tend to be more pseudo-traditionalist.
Okay.
From what all I've seen, he seems to be a person who likes to harken back toward the older eras of the show. It's clearly his hot heyday was Tom Baker or Davison, around in that time. But he's not going to be as inventive and abstract and high concept as Moffat was. But he's not going to be as romantic and warm and fuzzy as RTD was. So I think he's going to be a really interesting middleman. I don't think he's going to go. He's definitely going to try to bring it back a little bit down to where it's become, which is very dark and very murky and layer upon layer.
Without necessarily getting too dark, though, are we dealing with something where our characters are going to start to feel a little bit more fully realized? I mean,
you know, I guess it depends what you start with that. Because, I mean, I actually think that these characters feel quite realized. I mean, I know not everybody agrees about that, but I actually think that, like, to my taste, the Moffat characters have been very interesting. So, I guess, you know, I mean, I think it's a matter in some cases of sort of what you're liking or disliking right now. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, when I look at the thing that scares me a little is that when I look at his work, the things that I like are all things where he is writing characters that he has himself created. Yeah. Like, even in the stuff he's written for Doctor Who, like, if you look at something like The Hungry Earth, I don't feel like he's handling the characters I know very accurately or very well, but I love, like, Nazreen, you know, so, and I feel like, you know, that for that reason, I'm really curious to see the characters he develops, you know, and I'm not excited about the idea of handing over the characters I already know and like.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So maybe it serves to the good, then, that he is going to be given tabula rasa when it comes to the Doctor, because then, I mean, we've always tried to map the pattern to why does this Doctor persona follow this Doctor persona? What has happened historically to his predecessor that drives the nature of the next regeneration?
Sure.
But I think to a certain degree that also has to do with, because we know that a lot of that is where the story has driven it. Story is driven by what the producers feel is necessary to tell, or what is the right time to tell. If that's going to be the case, that also means the decision about the nature of the companion is also driven by where the story needs to go at any given moment. Do we have a definitive answer as to whether or not Bill will be the bridge between 10 and 11?
I was just about to ask, do any of us really think she's going to stay? And I don't. Rather disappointingly, I don't.
Okay. You know,
I think she's
going to
be dropped.
Yeah. I would be kind of surprised if she doesn't stay.
And I'm rather disappointed by that.
But, I mean, it's not like, you know, I say that for any reason. I mean, I don't have any information, obviously. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll sweep the board clean. I don't know. But
we don't have a precedent for a carryover when there's a showrunner change. I mean, we've only done this dance once.
Right. Exactly.
So
right,
and it's been an entirely new company.
Right. I mean, it's funny. You know, I think back to, you know, apparently many years ago, at one point when they were formulating the whole unit, you know, scenario for what would be John Pertwee's era. There was talk that
no pun intended, unit Pertwee era. Sorry,
yeah, sorry. there was talk that that Zoe might actually carry over with them,
right,
which would be the only kind of time where I think there's even been anything close to that sort of thing. But you know, it's funny thinking about it, and I realize I'm not actually answering any of your questions about casting, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
We'll steer back.
The thing that, because Chibnall is, when you look at something like Broadchurch, where he is comfortable, as you say, what Heather said, the characters that he creates, he's very comfortable with, and I think, in a weird way, the best, I can't help but think the best series of Doctor Who he could come up with is one that would probably be the one sort of most, not necessarily down to earth, but the one that is just revolving around the same character. Like, I think it would be fascinating to see something that was almost more like a mini series that, in a way, that hasn't been done since the first season of the Revival. Because, you know, if you look at the first season of the Revival, it's effectively a 13-part mini series.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I'd put up there with stuff like I, Claudius, and Trisid Revisited, for that matter. But I think I'd almost like to see him do one that really does follow, you know, a lot of characters. I don't want the Doctor to be incidental. I mean, all kidding about Eric Sayward notwithstanding, I want the Doctor to be a part of the story.
So you want it to be more like a family. You want like a unit family, like Rose Tyler and her compadre kind of thing.
It's not exactly that I want that. It's just I almost think that might be where he would be best. I'm not, and you know, because again, he does, he's shown kind of an ability at kind of creating, environments, you know, not family groups, but you know, creating something like the town in Broadchurch. It is
okay.
You know,
everybody has a story to tell if you just scratch a little bit below the surface. Okay,
but that would also mean not getting out there, not exploring. And that's why I think it's like, on the one hand, it might be the best thing he would come up with. I don't think it would be very good for the show.
Okay.
Having said that, most of what I knew Stephen Moffat before he wrote for Doctor Who was Coupling. So clearly.
Which I adored.
Yes.
Which so, is one of the funniest shows ever written, however we might feel about other things about it. But, yeah. You know, it's hilarious.
Which Moffat says he could actually revive because everybody looks the same. So, which he would.
It does seem there's going to be a greater move towards consistency.
Yes.
If writer's room is implemented, that's one of the main things of a writer's room, is a consistent feel to the story-wise.
Well, let's.
I don't necessarily know that's a good thing, but that's a whole other panel.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we'll pro con that tomorrow. The moving from a specific focus on series 11, and let's just look at the program at large, and because we have a certain degree of known material that's going to be coming at us in a little over a month's time, and we're going to start to meet our new companion, learn about our new relationship. I had a phenomenal panel on the closing day of the last LI Who back in November, where we were talking about the Doctor companion relationship. And historically, all the different pairings that have come about. And one of the closing things that came out of that discussion, which got really raucous in the last about 15 minutes or so of it, was that what we were really kind of hoping for, what seemed like consensus around the room, was that we'd like to see a relationship, or at least situations that drive a relationship, that remind us of the Seventh and Ace. Comedic at times, very caring for one another, but still of that very professorial and mentor towards the student kind of relationship. There are hints that that's exactly what we're going to get from Bill. Always asking questions, jumping first and asking after she's already in the air, and that kind of eagerness. So that got me thinking, as far as representations of certain character types that we would like to see, whether it's in the next couple of months or next season or what have you, what have we yet to receive from the program that we think is either underrepresented as far as cultural representations, societal representations, or character archetypes that just haven't been in there that need to be more at the forefront because of where the story and where the tone of the program is currently headed? Do we have thoughts and feels on this?
Long question.
Yeah. I ask it because I do. You know, and I don't want to jump ahead to what's going to happen with 13th Doctor, because there are things on the table right now.
Yeah.
You know, I look at things like LGBTQ representation within the program that to date has almost been used as a punchline in every instance. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, it's there. At least they're using it. It's part of the program, and it's not something that they hide away. No, that's true. They don't. But they use it almost as a comedic element. Force-fed.
Well, POC characters, I think, is the big elephant in the room concerning Bill.
Sure.
Because we already had one POC character companion who was basically thrown under the table, sidelined, and was pretty much thrown away. Give romantic interest at one point, done with. And now that Capaldi's leaving, she could just be gone and written out at the last minute because the next guy doesn't want to deal with it. So, and I don't think that technically really looks good at all. And I do think we need that kind of, because if the Doctor is going to always be a white English male.
Of a certain age.
What?
Of a certain age.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think the age is quite varied at some point. I think there needs to be more variety. Now, for a show that is in England, especially in the newer series, there has been a lot more in the cast itself, POC characters, which is the nature of UK television. But for main characters, not really. I mean, Mickey, Martha, Bill,
Danny,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that is difficult for me as an American viewer... One thing that's difficult for me as an American viewer is I tend to sort of want it to look like what I see because I feel like that represents reality. But, you know, British people don't see what I see, right? Because the balance is very different. Now, that said, I'm not letting them off the hook, you know? Mm. I mean, like, especially if they're in London, right? This is a very diverse place. But I do think that sometimes for American viewers, other kinds of diversity are not as visible. Like, I think not all American viewers recognize what a huge proportion of the British population of color is Indian.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example. Yeah. So, you know, it's really easy as an American to look at it and say, why aren't there more black people on this show? Well, you know, maybe it needs to be more sensitive and nuanced than that. That said, they haven't done a very good job historically of including any sort of people of color, but I think they're doing better.
Non-cis Protestant.
Something that struck me in the coverage of the London bombing the other day, and one piece of footage that got recycled over and over, there are several Muslim women in hijabs running away from Parliament House.
You know, it is interesting, though, I thought that I read several things about that bombing that did not mention the race of the attacker and in any way, even though they knew who it was. Like, you know, they immediately...
Yeah, I only found out today that it was a man of...
British-born, but ethnicity, yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the way they talk about it in England is different from the way we talk about it, I guess, is
absolutely
the point.
There's definitely different ways towards race.
That's paranoid.
But I second her with an Indian representation, because it is such a huge part.
Yeah,
and there was a rumor about the new companion being an Indian soap actress, and I was really hoping for it, because I thought that was something new and hadn't been done.
Hmm.
Also, she's terrific. I mean,
is she good? She's some people have said she was good.
Yes,
they asked her about it. She had no idea about it, but it was highly rumored. You know what I'm talking about, Don?
Rocky something.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
who
was on EastEnders and stuff.
Yes.
She was really.
Who hasn't? Yes.
Yeah.
I've been on
EastEnders. Right. It's like, yeah, I've been on 5 EastEnders and 4 Law and Orders, so I've got them all covered.
I was an Emmerdabble. We don't talk about that.
This is Zed Cars of its day.
Yeah, I mean, really, like one of
you
the
said
only,
Zed,
the only
it's funny, you tried
people
Zed.
That is the proper type.
Yes,
in any of the Doctor Who's was when in the one where they were trapped in this sort of hotel-like thing, and then there were these sort of monsters that were taking people out one at a time.
It's a good topic.
And it, which I found equally astonishing, too.
I was very disappointed that they immediately threw that character under the bus.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, they did... There are opportunities that the show has experimented with that have at least, and I'm glad that it got some of the recognition. Like you take Rassilon's latest regeneration,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and opportunities like that, which are still the fact that it still surprises the viewing audience, says that we still have work to do. Okay, when there's a gender flip, when there is a racial basis.
Oh, you mean the generals?
Generals.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was like, he is old, wasn't he?
No, that's
what you
the general. Yes.
Correct.
Yes. I was so surprised. Many people are bothered about that.
Or when we've got, and we'll step back a little bit and say our master to Missy and the avenues, the opportunities that opens up for future experimentation with the casting choices. But this is a dream casting panel.
Mm-hmm.
So this is now allowing us to be able to say, you know what? All things being equal, if I had the opportunity to put my finger down on the program and say, you know what? Right now, after the cold open and the credits roll, you now see the following individual on screen. Either as new companion, who's going to be in there for at least a couple of episode run, a walk-on, okay, or you could have a return to a classic character rethought. So I'll give you those three sandboxes you're allowed to play in. Ponder it for a second. We'll play some hold music. Not really.
This is like almost the only question I really thought through an answer to.
All right. So if anybody wants to jump in with regards to future companions. Now let me preface this. This is, we know Bill's going to be with us through 10. Nardal. Whatever, going to be with us at least through part of series 10.
Don't tell
we
us
don't,
all how you're
we don't know. I'm willing to give it a fair shake. Matt Lucas is a phenomenal actor. He's a chameleon.
He's really good,
but
yeah.
Okay, so it's future companion, doctor,
future
and
future companions.
Mm-hmm.
Day of, you know, walk on, you know, sort of short run companions or supporting characters who are there for the sake of the one bottle episode, or a classic character or character type that has been brought in a new way. And you get to be able to say, I may have a particular actor in mind, or I may just say, you know what, it's time to have somebody who is this or that individual. Anybody.
Romana.
Yeah.
As president, do you want to take that storyline that Big Finish ran with and bring her in as the president?
I think something happened. I mean, my expanded media, Big Finish, a fanboy, I think going back to her being president would be something that's been done. I think something happened to that. That's why she's not there anymore. But I do think that there's a high possibility of her coming back. And it'd be interesting. And it would definitely be some sort of appeasement for people who would want, if it, you know, it doesn't happen, a female doctor. Because Romana, to be honest, has been there and done that. She could hold her own and do it. And Romana's spinoff, wouldn't that be amazing?
No, I'm sorry, but will it be Lala Ward's incarnation, or will it be...
Oh, no, it'll be a regeneration.
Something post-Romana. Yes. So Romana 4, 5,
yes.
Yes. Some parallel.
It would be someone new.
It would be a really interesting dynamic to put up against Missy.
Yes.
In my fantasy world, she's played by Gina Torres.
Okay.
Well, I've been saying for 35 years that Penelope Keith would make a fantastic master. She has such a gift for snark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my vote would be for Noma Dumezweni, who's currently playing Hermione in London in Harry Potter and the
okay.
First Child.
Yeah,
she's been on Doctor Who before. She was like a unit soldier in... it was one of the specials with
Planet of the Dead.
David Tennant.
Was it with a bus?
Yeah, the one with the bus.
Okay.
She was on there.
Oh,
Forgotten
Dreamland. No,
Planet of the Dead.
The
one I'm trying to forget.
And she has a phenomenal voice,
okay.
And she is she like literally steals Harry Potter and Percy.
She'd probably be a good pick. She's because she's in.
That's true. That's true.
But I think Ramona has a lot of potential.
All right, so a return to Ramona. Yeah, established.
For a past character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to throw one in just because I really want to see the character back on television again, and I'm probably going to rally for this till the end of time. I want to see the monk back.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I am totally on board for that.
Yep, I am.
But I want somebody who sort of takes the sinister nature out of it, and I want an actor who's going to sort of play it it's strictly business. This is just, I'm just here to make a buck,
the question that raises, though, is, you know, for the benefit of the general audience who will not have heard the Big Finish stories, mm-hmm. you know, are you, like, do you even acknowledge that, you know, because, you know, some of the Paul McGann stories.
Right. I like where they went with it.
Yeah.
I think that's fine, but they went almost to the point where this is just a flaunting of Time Lord abilities in order to just manipulate for gain.
Right.
But the monk, even as televised, was really not so much a villain as a...
Frenemy.
Pardon?
Frenemy is the term I would use.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a master light relationship. Oh, you cad!
Chaos.
Oh,
yeah,
element of chaos.
Yeah, exactly. They're chaotic neutral. Really.
Well,
in a grand alignment of
it would be very interesting to see, since he's already playing the role in Big Finish, to see Rufus Hound do it. I think Rufus Hound could translate perfectly back into playing the master on television. It would be weird to see someone who played it on Big Finish on the show, but Rufus has already been in the last season, so that would cause some complication. But Rufus is a very, very good idea for the character. But there's loads of opportunities for the monk to be brought back. There's so many people that can do it justice. Roger Allam.
Ooh.
Roger Allam can be my choice for everything. He's actually the one person I thought of the whole. I asked you about it, and I thought Roger Allam for the next Doctor. I know he's an old white man, but God help him, is he good? He could be the master. He can be the old fat white man companion. I don't care. Roger Allam's good, but the monk for Roger Allam. There
it's,
you go.
Do you
guys know who he is? From The Thick of It and Cabin Pressure.
I'm
going to
throw a really
Endeavor.
Odd one at you that I had pictured for the monk because I wanted to see him actually be. Well, depending on the Doctor, they would have. In my headspace putting him against. If it were still a Capaldi doctor, you know, a gentleman in his 60s, you know, seen the world, wears the weight of it on his face, on his shoulders, and then you, and I really wanted to change it. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. Mom's death.
I suggested this two nights ago to my husband. I'm not even kidding you.
Okay. Because it was, I don't know how long ago, I watched, I think it was an HBO film that he did with Alan Rickman called
Something the Lord Made.
Something the Lord Made. Yeah. Right, where they were playing doctors, and he was, this was back in 60s, like set in 63, 64, and he was one of the first really nationally recognized surgeons. So I got to see him in a very dramatic role. This was not like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy stuff where they saddled him with something horrible.
In which he is brilliant, yes. Let's be clear.
He is good for it.
He was, but he's good for it.
What is this Alan Rickman movie?
I have trouble with anyone but the radio.
The thing I most remember most of from was a movie with Bruce Willis called 16 Blocks. And he was very good in that. So I can't say, but I haven't seen a lot of his oeuvre.
But it proved to me that he had the ability to do dramatic, but also carry some... he has comedic chops as well. Great presence on camera, because he's an entertainer and performer by nature. But also putting an American actor against our currently British doctor.
Mm-hmm.
To have just that little extra element, because I know... the way we, in American programming, tend to represent the Brits, well, they, you know, we're still harboring something for the Revolutionary War, and we don't really trust them too much. Well, Americans are big, dumb, clod-hopping, wearing things when we get represented in British programming a lot as well. So it would still have that little aspect of is he really trustworthy at all? Is he just in it for himself? Is he really a villain, or is he just a typical American as represented, or as presented to a British viewer?
Moses Death would definitely be a very interesting spanner in the world.
So that's where I was headed with that sort of
thing. No, that's good. But that is a good idea. The villain who's not, well, he's not even a villain. I mean, just antagonist in the very
classic
sense
of
the word.
Essentially. Yeah. But even aside from that, even aside from known entities within the program, are there things that were, there are either characters that establish situations or things that have to be contended with or just somebody you'd like to see play off of the Doctor that have really not been given an opportunity yet, and you're like, yeah, if I had the reins, this is what I want to throw into the mix, just to see where it would go for 52 minutes.
Well, I think what we have now, what we have of the new companions, is definitely trying to do that. Having a male companion who's a comic element to it, and Bill, I mean, whatever was going on with Clara and this Doctor, whatever they were doing in the past two seasons, romantic or whatnot, they certainly had their own dynamic. So I think when you give the Doctor a new companion or a new somebody to work off, you show different sides of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Doctor will never act the same way with the same person twice, almost. Yeah. There's always something to it. So I would like to see just a regular male companion, I think, no matter whatever the Doctor is.
Okay.
Just take that showing a young girl a new adventure kind of vibe out, or an older companion, an older woman companion, I think would be great.
I know you're digging for an Evil and Smile. You just gotta stop.
I know, but, you know, it was great.
Well, I would like to see that, this older woman character, I would like to see that this season, because already, like, I think that is... If you're going to say, like, I hate everything Stephen Moffat's ever done, right, you still have to admit he's written some really dynamite roles for older women, and that almost doesn't exist on television, right?
Okay. And as we know, England exports great old women actors.
So, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, I want to let him do that. You know, I don't trust Chibnall with it somehow. And this is actually kind of the thing that makes this panel as a whole kind of tricky to me, is that there are lots of things I would like to see in the next Doctor that I'm not sure I want Chris Chibnall to be in charge of.
Okay.
I would love to see a woman as the next Doctor. Don't totally know that I really want him to be handling that.
100%. That's my stand line. I don't trust Chibnall for writing a female. I would want a female showrunner for a female Doctor.
I mean, at the same time, like, I know that's a problem too, because I feel that way, but I also know it's a problem.
But
like, you can't wait for that, you know?
Sure.
I mean, when's Sarah Dollar going to be ready, right? But
yeah. at the rate that she's clobbering him, next Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, it could be.
Is Rachel Talley up for it? She can do everything. Write, direct, showrun, bring her on.
Yeah, well, before we get to the doctor discussion, because that's going to be something that just kind of opens hell on earth.
But I'm gonna get my brimstone.
But don't get too hung up yet on calling out companions, because there's also just the opportunities to have somebody for the sake of an episode or maybe a two story arc that just says, you know what, for the next hour to potentially 2 hours, the doctor is alongside this individual, or really has to come to this person's rescue, or relies on this individual to try to get through the situation at hand. And I know that there are a number of opportunities I can personally identify where it's just been a matter of, okay, I get it. You're older than time, you're clever as hell, you're more brilliant than 99% of the sentient beings out there, and you have the memory to boot. But every once in a while, you're caught unprepared. And there's an individual out there, whether it's the person that's been standing next to you for the last who knows how many years, or someone you just met off the street who suddenly teaches you something new. And I love those moments when the doctor is rocked back on their heels because they were caught unprepared and it came from the most unlikely source to find the solution for the situation at hand. And I think some of the instances where we have not really been given too much of that opportunity, I want to see a child.
That was one of the first things that was coming up
that
in my
is,
head.
That is yeah. not... Forest of the Night, God, that episode.
Or annoying,
right?
Most children yeah. are annoying.
So I don't want precocious, but I want pivotal, if there's a distinction between the two.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like this is something that we've seen enough, like, tantalizing glimpses. Mm-hmm. You know, young Amelia Pond, perfectly handled, not nearly enough of her. You know?
Well, Moffat has a weird trope with doctor companions meeting the doctor when they're young. And then seeing them when they're older.
Yeah.
That's a weird trope with him.
But also, you know, young Rupert Pink, that actor had done nothing. He'd done, like, no TV, no nothing. They just found that kid. You know, I mean, so this is something they're good at,
yeah.
you know?
Well, when the doctor's with a young person, it usually heightens the wizardly, magical elements of him.
It can, but it also means it gives us an opportunity, which we saw in episodes like Listen. Where we get a quick, nice, unusual glimpse of the doctor's childhood, which usually comes with no explanation whatsoever, but it allows us to be able to just chew on questions for the next 6 months, which we adore. So, yeah, and not to mention the fact that specifically with Capaldi with children brings out not necessarily a wizardly approach, but an amazing side of a doctor that is always characteristically, whether he's actually presenting it or whether it's just the other characters talking about him, keep trying to cast him in this very spiky light.
It's softening him.
Precisely.
Children. Because he has to behave for children.
Flies in the face of it. So, help me out on my adult memory, tutoring center on a Friday night, about the moment where the doctor pauses everything and is just within one of the final episodes, where he's actually speaking to youngsters and giving them a bit of or sort of consoling them or not consoling but calming them about the dangers of the situation at hand. Am I making this up in my head?
No, I'm sorry.
This was. Capaldi actually made an appearance at the Doctor Who Experience as the Doctor and was speaking to a panel of kids where one of them was asking them about, you know, how do we deal with bad stuff we hear in the news. And off the cuff, improvised, he had the most amazing, heart-wrenching response to kids where he was, in character, was essentially saying to them, there are times when I can't be everywhere at once. And that's why I'm hoping, by example, you're learning that you have the power within you to do amazing things and change the world around you and protect those that you love. And he was coming up with all of this, and all the kids. There's two shots of it. There's the clip that the experience shared, that's obviously camera facing, and there's another one that was taken from the audience that was out catching him in the crowd. And all the kids are leaning forward and taking it all in, and the parents
are all just slowly melting in their chairs because they can't take process what they're hearing.
Because it was that kind of a statement that to me says that's the core of what the doctor
is. I think it's a very special quality. And it's a very special quality of the person who plays the doctor. Sylvester McCoy was in a convention in Australia a couple of years back, and a little girl in the audience asked him, why does the doctor... No, well, why, says, why do you, she was the thing. Why do you go and travel in space and time? And without a beat, he said, because so I can meet you.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't melt your heart a little bit, but it just shows you the kind of, like you said, the core of the character. Mm-hmm. And for children, I think it's a very important, it still aspects of children's show, the character... still kind of, you know, touches, well, that's not the right word, touches children. No, don't say that, Dan.
strikes a chord.
Let's edit that.
Strikes a chord, there you go, yes.
You know,
I would love to see the show work through something like, you know, a child who's abandoned that he rescues and help kids work through that whole fear that a lot of kids have about being abandoned.
Kind of did that with
you know, having a broken family or something like that, and just finding himself in a situation where...
I mean, maybe
you know,
filtered through, but like maybe, I mean, filtered with maybe more bells and whistles because, of course, they want 6 million people to watch on Saturday
yeah,
night.
Right.
But no, that's funny. It's funny you say that because that was one of those ideas. You know, I don't know, you know, for some reason, I started writing a piece of fan fiction called The Child of Time or something. Yeah, you know, but the idea of the doctor just having to... You know, basically, you know, he's got this person entrusted to him, probably under bad circumstances, because what other circumstances does that happen for him? And, you know, and you know, whether that was, over the course of a season, whether it's over the course of, you know, just it's within a season. But, you know, listening to you talk, though, one of the things, like what Peter Capaldi was saying, you know, reminded me of something that I think, one of the things I love about, that I do love about the current run of the show, and it's something I think has been in Doctor Who kind of as subtext for a long time. But I think I maybe first noticed it in one of the Big Finish stories they did in the 40th anniversary year when they did the Unbound stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they had David Warner, who's you know fantastic actor, who I would really love to see in a much better story than the one he appeared in on TV. when he was playing an alternate version of the John Pertwee Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And... there was this kind of this idea put there, and I don't, you know, I would bet money that Russell T. Davies heard that particular story because part of the essence of it is, you know, that when the doctor wasn't there, you know, it wasn't just that all this bad stuff happened. It wasn't just that the doctor wasn't there to stop the Autons or, you know, to keep the Mars mission thing from turning into an interplanetary war. It's like the doctor makes people better. I mean, that's the thing, and you know, and it's there, you know, I mean, it became more overt, certainly with Rose, you know, although really Ace is probably the kind of starting point that I think you'd really see. And I do love that idea, the doctor makes people better.
Well, that gentleman at the back of the room with that big number means that we can start to broach our next doctor discussion.
Which is one little thing. I thought of another person, of a person I'd say the doctor being stuck with in the scenario. Someone who saved the universe who was better at it than him and didn't have the quirks. Someone who was just very serious about saving the universe and it would just put the doctor on total edge. Doctor's the one in charge, the one in command, has his little quirks, but someone who was just a tiny bit better at doing things than him.
You know, you already suggested Romana, and I'm sensing a theme here.
Okay, I didn't think, well, you kind of slid in that one, didn't you? But I was thinking of the Capaldi Doctor in Robin Hood, the Robin Hood story.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Seeing him put on edge and kind of wanting to be the bigger, better man, but to see someone who didn't really put up with, put your banana back in your pocket. You don't need a yo-yo to do this. You just do it like that. But, okay, Romana, you've undercut that. Go to your next question. Thank you a lot, Heather.
But you see that also with Eccleston's doctor and Jack in their first meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a Moffat thing. I don't know. But no, I again, well, it's funny, you know, Romana, because I remember year ago at this time when we were talking about the whole growing beyond the screen thing, you know, with Romana.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's been a year.
You know, and yeah, well, time passes for us at least. But, you know, the thing I've always loved about Romana and what they did with her, and which the kid who grew up, you know, watching those episodes would love to see. You know, I mean, Romana made did the toughest thing of all. You know, again, if you treat that as sort of proper continuity, you know, she became, if you'll pardon the expression, the man. But by becoming president of Gallifrey, I mean, you know, the Doctor is great at, you know, knocking, you know, like, you know, turning over the moneylenders' tables, so to speak.
Yeah.
Romana, you know, chose to, you know, work from within, and
exactly.
I think that, and I love that
the system.
Dynamic.
She'll change,
you know,
from
I love. There's a big finish, and, you know, maybe, and I'm hot and cold on Gallifrey, and whether the Doctor should really go back there too often, but I do love the fact that Big Finish is doing a story where they actually show, after the events of the Five Doctors, the Davison Doctor having to take on the office of president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to play it for laughs, and I think I'll probably enjoy it.
Well,
don't get me wrong, but it's funny because there is part of me would love to see again the Doctor become the man, because he doesn't like that role. You know, you see it in the way it was treated in the finale of Baldwin's first season.
He's pretty anti-establishment for the most part.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, and I don't even know anti-establishment. He doesn't have any interest in being the establishment. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, sometimes he's anti-establishment, and sometimes he's sort of like, you know, he's in support. Right, of whatever.
Well, I'll
he's a president of Earth.
I'll rephrase that. He's anti of the type of attitudes that are so associated with people who are in the establishment, because usually the establishment are people who can't see past their own nose.
You know, I mean, I just think about like how often he's saying, you know, you need you, whatever the society is, now you need a leader who's going to put everything back together and lead you forward, and that is just not ever going to be him, because he's not interested, you know?
Right.
Like when he leaves Stephen behind or whatever, you know? I mean, he recognizes that need. It's not like he's, you know, in any way in favor of anarchy, you know?
No, he's there to wrest the power away from the demagogues and put it back into the hands of the people, but how they choose to implement that is entirely up to them. So, that being said, until they turn the lights off on us in a couple of minutes here.
It's okay, but they'll turn them back on.
That's true. We have an opportunity. This is dreamcasting. This is not what you think is going to happen. This is what you want to happen. Perfect world. You close your eyes, you rest your head down your super soft or super firm pillow. I'm not going to say how you want your pillow to be, but when you go to sleep at night and you say, I can't wait until they make the announcement that the 13th Doctor is finally blank.
As much as I would love a woman, I'd probably say Patterson Joseph. He actually auditioned to be the 11th Doctor and didn't get the part, but he was on the show before then, during the 9th Doctor's era. He was part of the Weakest Link panel that
rolled on
in Bad Wolf,
okay.
The Parting of Ways. It would definitely check off the box of having a person of color up there. I think he'd be a fantastic.
Do you know much more about his body of work?
Not really.
I've seen him in a couple of things, here and there.
I haven't seen anything that I think. I mean, does he do serious work? I've only seen comedy. He's pretty adept.
I've seen him do more comedic stuff.
He's very adept at comedy.
I don't think that's a disqualifier. I mean,
right.
That may be where Chibnall chooses to go with the next Doctor. Say, you know what? We're going to make this fun again. We're going to do. It's going to be light. It's going to be airy. It's going to be young. It's going to be hip. It's going to be.
And I'd like to see some quirky one-off people. Like Susan Wahoma. She's another woman of color. She's on Crazy Head right now. She's great on that. She's you know, strange and, you know, witty, but she's really, you know, smart and resourceful and everything. She just makes everyone around her feel uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable with how intelligent she is, but then she'll just say these things that are really off the wall. And she's kind of the same type of character on Chewing Gum, too. So I'd even like to see her in Season 10 with Capaldi.
Okay.
Somebody that's, you know, just really weird and out there, and having Bill in there, the two of them interacting and everything together.
Just trying to figure her out for 50-some-odd minutes.
Well, for me, Pearl Mackey is dream casting as far as I can think. I was going to say, I really like her. I really like who she seems to be or who she presents herself to be as far as social media and what she's done in her interviews and everything. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
I was a Martha fan, and I don't like the way that a lot of things went with Martha and with Mickey. I feel like they both kind of were in Rose's shadow for the most part, especially with Martha and the way that the 10th Doctor treated her and everything. And
right.
And marrying them off.
Yeah, I was going to say, they just kind of married them off.
That suffered
also
from Tennant's exit was not what it should have been.
Right.
You know, Tennant should have had a full season. In my head, there's a version of that story that I assure you is much better.
It's interesting, when I listed off all the POC characters that the show had that are reoccurring, and I just thought about them, all of them have been very problematic, which is awful.
Yes.
What about, rest of folks, as far as the time is nigh in my head for the 13th Doctor to be? It could either be an individual, or it could just be a persona that you feel that the time is right for.
As much as I'm sure the people in merchandising at BBC Worldwide want a handsome face to put on action figures and posters and whatnot, I have to admit I'm kind of looking for frankly I'd rather see someone more like Peter Capaldi than David Tennant.
If that's going to be the case, if they're going to go with somebody with a lot of gravitas and somebody who really just kind of carries the weight of everything that the character has been through for 13 regenerations,
why do you think an older person would carry the weight?
I'm not saying necessarily older. I'm saying somebody that looks more. I'll say weather worn. Because you can still be in your 30s and 40s and look like you've seen a hell of a lot over the course of 30, 40 years.
I'm actually 70.
But I'm thinking like, well, and I know it's never going to happen, but Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's on my shortlist. Yeah.
But if you're going to go the young, affable route, and I know that I never pronounce his name the same way twice, but I love the man to death, and I watch him just do whatever he wants all day long, is Richard Iwade.
I don't know.
IT Crowd.
You ever seen the IT Crowd?
The IT Crowd.
I know what it is, but I've never actually seen it.
Okay.
Idris Elba is brilliant, and I think he could take the role in so many different directions, because
he's
done so
busy.
Many
I don't know if he...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's
I love
realistic.
Him
but this is dream.
I can't imagine him as quirky, to be honest.
You've never seen him do comedic?
I was going to say...
I've seen him do comedy and stuff, but I think... The Doctor's best when it's a character actor. And Idris Elba is just so leading man for the role.
I think
even when he was in The Wire, he knew when to step back and dominate the scene.
I mean, it could work. I mean, to say that it couldn't, but just from what I've seen from him.
Yeah.
Rufus Sewell is someone else that can do the job.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, Victoria is at his best in the scenes where I think it's him with Jenna Coleman.
Yes.
It plays that's the best of what I've seen of it.
Yes.
I couldn't watch too much because once the rats came out of the walls. But the...
Oh, we digress.
Sorry.
So there's nobody else that's like, or not even... Open those doors!
No, I mean, I actually would rather have it be someone I don't know about right now, because I feel like, for the most part, they've chosen people who are not big, big names, and I really, really like that.
Matt Smith a known entity?
He's been on stuff, but, I've never seen him in anything.
He had done a little small show. He had done one movie where he's, gay, and that's about it. There's nothing else he really did.
His TV resume was pretty... I mean, that's why...
Sparse.
The Davison comparisons were really not... were not about nothing but age, because Davison, as young as he was, was a bona fide TV star.
Yeah.
Not just that, he was in a really popular miniseries with Jeremy Irons, pre-Brideshead.
I prefer the element of the unknown, because it leaves your imagination blank for worry, and you can just create from right there. You don't have to work against any image.
So let the bookies throw their hypotheses out there, and let everybody under the sun create their headline of the week saying, well, if I were asked, I'd certainly say yes. Ed Sheeran says he'll be the next Doctor. Blah, blah, blah.
I'm out. My fandom is done.
Okay, flip the table. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anybody but Tilda Swinton, I'm just going to go out on a limb there.
Oh, Tilda Swinton. Yeah.
I can't stand that idea. And
I've never seen her do a comedic thing in her life.
She's good at it. When she's ever chosen for it.
She's really funny.
She's a supreme.
I just need to see it.
But that's the problem with typecasting.
Because I would just as soon say Dame Judi Dench should be done with it. All right. Well, folks, that's our time. We're going to switch the conversation over to
Ian's
discussion of the Ice Warriors for about a minute.
And that was just one of the many discussions that we were able to have at Regen this past year. And we look forward to joining Oni and team next year for yet another full roster of conversations with fellow podcasters, bloggers, writers, just general Whovian enthusiasts, a few celebrities along the way, and everything else that we can enjoy from the convention scene that they put on. It's absolutely not to be missed. So that's about it for episode 251 of Gallifrey Public Radio. So until next time, this is Kier saying I'm really, really sorry. No, really, really sorry that I attempted to do that double backflip summer salt triple sow cow at the campsite that led me to 3 days of pain medication and groaning. Sorry. See you next week. I won't see you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.